All right, quieten down, you lot. Tonight, at the waterfall, ladies, gentlemen, parrots and shellfish, in the blue corner, Mark the Investor Atkinson, weighing in at 197 pounds. And in the red corner, Titan Holdings PLC, weighing in at, well, not enough pounds. Let the rumble begin. Let's have a good clean fight. No punching below the belt. This episode of the podcast is generously hosted by Progressive Equity Research. Visit their website at progressive-research.com. Buying shares in a business is a good source of passive income when the company's turning a profit. Some fluctuation in performance is to be expected, but if something happens to make you concerned about your investment, you do have the right to attend the company's annual general meeting. This is the one time of the year when you can ask the directors to explain what's going wrong and to explain what's being done to put things right. Mark did just that recently at the Titan Holdings AGM, and today we'll be reviewing the questions that he asked and finding out how the board of directors responded. So Mark, what format does an AGM normally take?
Hi, Paul. Right, yeah, you mentioned about passive investing. I know that you went to the Holstone one, and that was positively comatose, wasn't it? These can vary enormously. Some boards welcome the opportunity to meet and discuss issues with shareholders and feel that they have a right to be involved with the company. After all, they are part owners of the business. Some boards are noticeably hostile to shareholders, especially to those that may ask searching questions. And, you know, these board meetings can typically be accelerated along if they want to get it wrapped up as soon as possible and curtail the Q&A session. Now, no two AGMs are alike, but many have similarities. Most are based around London, at some advisor offices or a hotel. Smaller companies like Titan often hold theirs at their own premises or in their own geographic region. And reception differs from welcoming questions, making shareholders comfortable, providing some refreshments and spending some time talking informally after the meeting, towards us again being a little bit hostile, selecting a time of the meeting that's prohibitive, and trying to wrap these proceedings up as quick as possible. The majority of meetings are woefully attended, and within that, the attendees mostly don't raise a question, and that helps create the atmosphere that it's all really much a formality. The AGM is a serious event, and the one opportunity for shareholders, let's say it again, are the owners of the business, to question the board collectively and publicly. In general, I think companies are to blame for the lack of engagement, but so too are shareholders, just for their inertia and their apathy.
Okay, so if any of our listeners are planning to attend an AGM, how should they prepare for that?
Well, it's a good idea to do some background research into it. You know, look at the valuation, look how it's developed or not over the previous 12 months, and certainly read the report is what I'd say. Read through it and find if there's something that you can, not that you're just looking to ask a question, but a line of inquiry that you need some elaboration on.
Right. Well, we're using the Titan AGM as an example. So what are the current base numbers for Titan?
Well, it's got a market cap of 8.7 million and a yield of 1.3%, but no calculable PE on the grounds that it's loss-making. That's based on a current share price of 75 pence. Now, this is the smallest company in my portfolio, and unfortunately, since I first invested 7 years ago, it's become smaller. Now, this business was started in 1972, I think it was, in John Anderson's shed, and I'm trying my utmost to make sure that we don't end up there.
So what kind of a loss? How much are we talking about?
The loss before tax, there's different ways of reporting loss, was 839,000, which was down slightly from 953,000 the previous year.
And briefly, a reminder of what is their area of business at Titan?
They are manufacturers and suppliers of mechanical and natural ventilation products and window and door hardware. Besides the UK, they have sales in Europe and also have a manufacturing joint venture in South Korea. And they have a small presence in the US where they have a single employee.
Right. So a lot of your recount of the AGM was based on notes, and a lot of issues can get discussed at these events. So investors shouldn't feel self-conscious about taking notes, should they? I believe Elaine is your notes taker.
Yeah, she does a really valuable job for me in that she's a very assiduous note taker. I just struggle with her handwriting at times. But I think it is sometimes when you're asking, it's not so bad if somebody else is asking a question, but when you've asked the question, you get the response, I think it's important that you can, where possible, fully absorb what they're saying to you. And if you're taking notes, sometimes you're more involved with taking the note than actually listening to what's being said.
On the issue of the running order, first off is normally a summary of the major events that have taken place in the year. So what's been happening at Titan since you last attended their AGM?
Well, the major events that are on, go all the way back to the 6th of April 2023, it was announced that the CEO, Alexander French, had agreed with the board to stand down. And in the interim, our CFO, Carolyn Isom, was leading the business assisted by Tyson Anderson. So it's worthy of comment that Carolyn has been bearing the lion's share of the responsibility of the CEO, as well as her own duties as CFO, for what has been will have been in excess of 12 months until the new CEO, Tom Carpenter, joins the business on the 23rd of April.
And who are Tyson Anderson and Tom Carpenter?
Tyson Anderson is the sales and marketing director. He's the son of the founder, John Anderson, and he's been with the company around 30 years. And Tom Carpenter, who's going to be our new CEO, he's previously worked for Belden Inc., who are a US supplier of network infrastructure and digitization solutions, where he was vice president of strategy and business development. On the 31st of May 2023, it was announced that following a divorce settlement, Tyson Anderson's previous beneficial shareholding would be held by his ex-wife. And as a result, he had no shareholding. Now, these are unfortunate personal circumstances, but for me, now that meant that between them, the two people responsible for leading the business didn't have a share between them. And I personally don't think this is a good message for shareholders, our employees, some who may themselves have a shareholding, and our recruitment when we're trying to attract top talent to a company with an exciting future. We'll perhaps return to this a little bit later. But probably the major development was the stake building of Harwood Capital at around 27%, and Jamie Brooke replacing Keith Richie's chair after non-exec Paul Hooper did a brief interim period.
And who are Harwood Capital?
Harwood Capital are a fund manager. They mainly focus on smaller companies like Titan, although there's not many quite as small as that. You could describe them as being quite activist in that they take a direct involvement. They generally get people appointed to the board. And generally, I would say they've been successful in unlocking value.
And Jamie Brooke works for Harwood?
No, he doesn't work for Harwood, but he is he's got a very broad CV. He's been in fund management for 25 years and private equity. Now, all our directors were present. I had a nice brief chat with Jamie ahead of the meeting, and at his suggestion, we exchanged telephone numbers. We're already connected on LinkedIn, and I met our new CEO, Tom Carpenter, who's yet to start and was there very much on a watching brief, but he was also very agreeable. In terms of shareholders, besides myself, there was David Barry, who is a significant shareholder with 5%, our good friend David Raywood, and Keith and Claire Ritchie, who have between them about 10%, and one further gentleman. I didn't get the opportunity to meet him, and the meeting commenced on time at 10 a.m.
Right. So after a summary of the key events, the first formality at virtually every AGM is that shareholders, or at least those that have shares that give them voting power, get a chance to vote for or against a number of resolutions that the company's proposing. So what were the resolutions proposed this year at Titan?
Yeah, it's the usual suspects to receive the report, declare a dividend. Nobody ever seems to vote against that one. The re-election of the directors, remuneration report, auditors, and things like power to allot shares and share buybacks, etc.
So votes are normally cast with a show of hands, I believe, but this was different at Titan this year.
Yes, this was somewhat protracted. Generally, there's a show of hands and then the proxy votes are read out. Now, however, the chair announced that as one of the resolutions had been voted against by the proxies, they'd taken legal advice and those present, including myself, who'd not voted by proxy, could vote in a poll and then these would be added. Now, as the proxies were read out, it became evident that it was Resolution 4 that was problematic, which was the re-election of Tyson Anderson, the Sales and Marketing Director, who's also a non-exec and deputy chair. And the proxy votes were 953,880 in favour and 1,893,007 against, with 110,000 withheld. So that's only 33.5% in favour and 66.5% against. That's if I've recorded that correctly.
So at this point, the vote was against his reappointment.
Yes. Following the reading of the proxies, those of us entitled to complete poll cards did and handed them in. Now, this included Tyson himself, who was no beneficial shareholder, but had, as I understand, a letter of representation, which is where I totally presume that was on behalf of a family member. His parents have approximately 15.5% between them. So we were then invited to take some refreshments until the votes could be tallied and checked. And this, of course, together with the unorthodox procedure, which had to be explained to us, did eat into the valuable time for the remainder of the AGM. The outcome was that Tyson in total received 2,479,512 in favour and 1,919,741 against, and he was duly elected. So in percentage terms, that was 56.4% versus 43.6%. So you could say he stumbled over the line, and in my personal experience, I've never witnessed something of this magnitude.
For the benefit of people who've never voted or been to an AGM, how does his vote go from 953,000 to over 2 million? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, well, it's not one man, one vote. It's not like going to the polling booth. It's all each share has a vote. So it's just a tally of the people who the votes that were in the room were added together, depending on the shareholding.
So in the event that he would have been voted off, what would have occurred?
Well, that's a very good question. Firstly, as we sat in something of a square and the board were not on the top table other than Jamie Brooke and Caroline, he was being spared the embarrassment of having to stand up and go and sit somewhere else. But presumably, this, you know, despite losing his board seat, he would have been retained in his capacity as an employee on the sales and marketing side. I'm not totally sure. I can only say that it must have been wounding.
Were there any other significant protest votes?
Jamie Brooke was voted in with 75% in favour. Now, his predecessor, Keith, and wife, Claire, are their extended family, may have had a hand in this, I can only presume.
And dare I ask how you voted, Mark?
Yes, certainly. Yeah, no secret ballot with me. I voted in favour of all the resolutions, with the exception of the re-election of Tyson, and the fellow non-execs, Jeff Ward and Nick Howlett. Now, neither Tyson or Jeff have any shares. And in Nick's case, in February, he sold 23,000, leaving him with 40,500. Now, other than that, I would have voted in favour of him. This is something of a principle for me. Now, directors having a shareholder is very important to me. And I think our interests are better aligned if they stand to win and lose as shareholders. And, you know, this has a burden on certain decisions they make. Now, directors are under no obligation to hold shares, and I understand that. But to the same token, I'm under no obligation to vote in favour of them.
So if you're going to an AGM, it's a good idea to find out if the directors and the non-executive directors hold shares in their own company. And that was basically one of the reasons, or the lack of shares was one of the reasons for your vote.
Yeah, it was the main reason. I remarked on the fact that last year's AGM about the law or non-existent shareholding. And I said that if the directors who've got a greater visibility and understanding of this business do not see compelling value, then neither should I. And I will follow your lead. And this doesn't bother some other shareholders, but it bothers me. Now, in that past year, since I said that, there's been no director buying, and therefore, rightly or wrongly, neither have I. Now, if we return to Tyson, you know, he's lost his beneficial holding following the divorce, but presumably he can subsequently then purchase some in the open market. And in addition to this, in the report, he was entitled to take up 25,000 options at just 58 pence, which is well below the current price, and he's allowed to elected to let these lapse. I really don't know why that might be. I've never, this, it must have happened somewhere else. I've never witnessed, I can't remember anybody letting their options lapse when they've been certainly in the money. And I really don't know what message this sends out, that he can't or he doesn't want to take up those options. So I advised Tyson, Jeff and Nick that I had voted against them and why. I think there's a greater value in explaining the motive behind a protest vote rather than it just being a number that could be for some unknown reason. You know, perhaps we should ask our audience for feedback, Paul. You know, to what extent are they influenced by director holdings as a sign of confidence in the business?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, but I mean, obviously, if anybody has any opinions about that, then do let us know. So following the votes, the normal procedure is to move on to the Q&A session. And that's what happens next. Really, a number of issues that get dealt with here. And how did that work out?
Yes, well, I offered to, and I've actually called it to open the bowling, and I came in off my long run. So my first question was for the chair on his appointment on the 22nd of December 2023. He stated in the RNS, "I'm delighted to be taking on the role of chair at Titan as it continues to grow its share of the ventilation systems and window and door hardware markets." So my question was, what is our percentage of these markets to which you refer, and to what extent have they grown? So Jamie explained that, you know, he's very much the new kid on the block, and he passed this across to Caroline, who said, typically our sales of mechanical systems are between 6 and 7%, but these had fallen back, and we're on target to hit 5 to 6% by the end of the financial year. Now, in Jamie's statement, I didn't know if they were referring to the UK alone or also Europe, Korea, and the USA. Caroline confirmed this was solely the UK. And also, unlike the window and door hardware, they do not possess detailed trade body information, and that this is a massive market, and they couldn't give me a figure. So that was in contradiction to that statement that came out in the RNS. Now, and I would say that is inconsistent. If we remember, just go back to that statement, as Titan continues to grow its share of the ventilation systems and the window and door hardware markets. Now, I wouldn't say it was deliberately misleading, but I would call that misleading. Now, Paul, you're the marketing man. You've been a top marketing man. Part of your job was to try and make me look good in the past. Is this, I know it was a tough job, is this can you tell us a little bit about marketing speak and spin and what do you think?
Well, it's, I mean, and I think continues to grow its share is an ambiguous bit of copywriting. I mean, the market share would have needed to have improved during the reporting period and improved in a previous period for that statement to be true, because otherwise the continues bit, you know, is inappropriate. So I'd see that as an unqualified statement, but I'm not aware of the figures. But imagine a lot of investors will just simply take it as read that there is continuous improvement. And of course, that is the objective of the copywriter.
Yeah, it did suggest to me like a consistent growth.
Yes,
I mean, using that argument, because when we were at 20%, it's gone down to 1%, but we've gone up to 2% now, so we're continuing to grow. But I don't know if it was perhaps, you know, just a lazy comment. I don't know, or just sloppy. I think it's, but I do think it that could have been better. And that's why we ask these questions, in order to get some greater detail, not just to take things at face value. So my next question, I'd waited 50 weeks to ask this, and as I alluded to earlier, the last AGM, we voted in favour of Alexander French being re-elected. And just bear with me on this where I read this out, Paul. Under the resolution, it stated, the chair confirms that following performance evaluation, Ms. French continues to be effective and demonstrates commitment in her role. There was also a recommendation signed off by Carolyn in her multitasking role as company secretary. The directors believe that the resolutions which are to be proposed at the annual general meeting are in the best interests of the company and its shareholders as a whole, and recommend that all shareholders vote in favour of them, as each of the directors intends to do in respect of his or her beneficial holding. Now, I've already pointed this out, that not all the directors do indeed have a beneficial holding. And I also read out that under the compliance with the QCA code, the board is accountable to the company's shareholders for good corporate governance. Titan's business approach is based on openness and high levels of accountability, and there is a commitment to high standards of corporate governance throughout the group. And also under communications with shareholders within the corporate governance report, the board recognises the importance of communications with shareholders. So after re-electing Alexandra, with a mere 99.97% in favour on the 22nd of March at the AGM, an RNS was released on the 6th of April 2023 at 17:03, which was after trading hours on the Maundy Thursday ahead of the long Easter weekend. Now, at last year's AGM, I gave several examples of how Titan had released random RNSs, at random times, and how this surprises investors and often spooks them. And I said that this was to rectify this could be an easy win for them. So the irony of this not being heeded was not lost on me. Now, in my experience of somebody departing, the die is cast well in advance. And my question was, had it been decided in advance of the AGM, either officially or unofficially, that Alexander would be asked to stand down, and following the AGM, to avoid questions and scrutiny by the shareholders, was the decision to release the RNS at such an uncommon time done deliberately to attract as little attention as possible? So, yeah, that was one on the front foot. Jamie kicked off by saying that obviously he was not around at the time, but that in principle he's strongly in favour of RNSs being released at 7 a.m., be they good or bad, rather than other times throughout the day, when, you know, depending on what kind of investor you are, you might not see that till late in the day. I thought that was very reassuring. Caroline gave assurances that they did not sit at last year's AGM, knowing that Alexandra will be leaving. And then I pursued this by asking that, as they had met at a board following last year's AGM, did they convene a physical or a virtual meeting? And when was this? Where, what point did they actually discuss Alexandra's position? So I was told that it was a physical meeting, but nobody seemed to remember when this was. Now, Jamie said that they would come back to me. So there was presumably they could just looked at the laptop. A number of people there, they could have looked at a personal organizer. Really, I should have pressed for, I could have pressed that to say, well, can you not decide, tell me now when that meeting was? So I've had a response back very promptly, together with a couple of other points I raised after the meeting. And I was told that Alexandra's resignation concluded on the 6th of April, the date was announced. Now, that's not the question I asked. That was one of the benefits of getting things resolved in the meeting, because I could have gone back and said, well, I didn't say when it was concluded. The question was about when was the decision made by the board. So I've not contested that answer. What have I to benefit from it now? I think I've made the point. I'm not going to win any awards as Woodward and Bernstein trying to undercover something, but I think for as a point in future, I think if somebody says they'll come back to you and you think it could be answered there and then, that's probably the way to go.
So I know the issue of CEOs troubles you a little bit with Titan. So how many CEOs have they actually had?
Well, in recent times, I think I mentioned four. David Ruffell, who'd been a long-term CEO, he left on the 30th of April 2021. Matt Norris, then from the 12th of July 2021 to the 9th of February 2022. Alexandra, from the 3rd of May 2022 until the 6th of April 2023. And Tom Carpenter starts on the 23rd of April this year. So I've pointed out that in the previous 3 years, we've been without a CEO for 18 months and over 12 months. Until Tom starts, you know, we'd not had a CEO for over 12 months. Now, I added that I'm sure, especially as he was sat next to me, that he's the right man for the job. But why had it taken so long to recruit somebody? Now, I didn't receive a direct answer back from Jamie, as he was not involved back then. And it was very much a bit of an extent of spilt milk under the bridge. On the previous appointments, but added, but there'd probably been some error and misfortune. And in the most recent event that we had, in effect, had an acting CEO through Carolyn. So this was, to an extent, comforting, and we must appreciate Carolyn's indefatigability. But there is a reason why the roles of CEO and CFO are not done jointly, and it's down to the enormity of the job. These are two demanding full-time positions. So Carolyn is CFO. She's been acting CEO. She's the company secretary. I wouldn't have been surprised if, when I entered the Titan's premises, if I'd seen her driving one of the forklift trucks.
Okay, so another question that's important to ask is the business making the best of the opportunities in its market? So how are things with Titan in that respect?
Well, I've been a shareholder for 7 years, and I've been broadly supportive throughout the comings and goings of CEOs and other directors. And I've had to sit through some disappointing years with reasons given as Brexit, COVID, labour shortages, component shortages, raw materials, energy prices, inflation, the problems with the ERP system, changes in the South Korea market, the loss of Sabinco, a key supplier, etc., etc. And I think I've just reached what I think I called it in the meeting, the end of the jam tomorrow journey. I've kept my powder dry, hoping that the new UK building regulations, over which came in the we've had the last financial year is the first full year that they've been in place, and I was hoping that this would have given a significant tailwind that would have put probably everything else right. Now, unfortunately, I've clearly misjudged this as an investment, and the turnover is up just 1.1%. So my argument was that given the cost structure, we're going to struggle to generate a return for shareholders.
Another good question would be, is the company recruiting the right people to resolve issues like this?
Yes, in the past year, we've been recruiting for leadership roles in operations, commercial and R&D. And I was asking what we're doing to groom and develop our own staff. For one, I think it encourages employee retention if they can see opportunities to promote and for promotion and personal development. And let us not forget that it costs money to go staff shopping. There's extensive interviews and psychometric testing. And even after that, you don't know the person in great depth. If you recruit from within, you don't have to serve a notice period, and you don't have to pay any recruitment firms. So you can see some of the benefits of developing from within. The response from Carolyn was encouraging, and this was obviously an area that she showed, I got to say, a great deal of passion towards. Employees of development plans, training needs are being identified earlier. The wider management team are being developed to narrow the gap between the top management, and they are looking to recruit apprenticeships. They recently brought an apprentice into the finance department, and we're looking to do the same in the factory.
Okay, another question on my list is the business operating efficiently? And on this point, you raised two concerns. The first one was about Titan having a head office in Colchester, which is only 30 miles away from the manufacturing facility in Haverhill.
Yes, this is an oddity for a company this size, and I've pressed on this previously, and I described it at the AGM as a luxury we cannot afford. Also, following COVID, people have been working on a hybrid basis within Titan. So my argument was that moving to Haverhill, would that not be more rational? I stated that I would expect a cost analysis on running Colchester to have been conducted. And that's what was this in terms of rent, heating, duplication of staff, lost man hours, commuting costs between the two sites, and even other peripherals, duplication of EV charging points. So Carolyn answered this by saying that they'd looked at it 2 or 3 years previously and the cost was negligible. She couldn't remember exactly what it was, but it was around £100,000. Now, from where I'm sitting as a shareholder, £100,000 for a company this size is not negligible, and every pound is a prisoner. We've been loss-making. Now, she said that it didn't make economic sense to break the lease, that people were working in a less hybrid fashion, and did make a valid point that if they moved to Haverhill, they could lose staff and will be competing against employers in Cambridge. Caroline advised that there was no duplication of staff, to which I queried, well, not even cleaning staff, to which she said, well, yes. And I think this seemed a petty point. There was a little titter around the room. But I returned to the point that, you know, we've recorded a loss in 3 out of the last 4 years, so nothing should be off the table. Jamie came in here and he agreed with my point. He pointed out that although not visible, they had taken costs out of the business and were determined to run things more aggressively, and that indeed nothing was sacred. Jamie agreed that regarding a remote head office, ideally you wouldn't start from here. And as we look at it now, I think it will be difficult for them to extricate themselves out some form of collateral damage.
And the second of your concerns is about Titan's plant in South Korea.
I think it's fair to say, pleasingly, that this is an area in more immediate focus. I started by reading an extract from the 2018 annual report where they had identified, due to increased air pollution in South Korea, that the market was moving towards mechanical ventilation over natural ventilation, and Titan Korea's product, unlike the UK, solely natural. So we'd had somebody in the crow's nest who's seen the iceberg on the horizon, but we've not changed course. Now, I describe this as, you know, hoping for the best and not planning for the worst. Now, I referred to Jamie and Carolyn's presentation on Investor Meet Company on the 25th of January, which is available on YouTube. And he said of Korea, it may seem a long way away. Well, I would say it is. And he added that in the past, it had been a major contributor to profits. And I said, you know, I just want you to be mindful of your tenses. That profitability is in the past. And it's not a time to be unduly loyal. So again, Jamie agreed on this. that it's not the past but the future, but he was limited to what he could say on this issue. But from where I'm sitting, clearly this is a situation that's in play. Now, this is in contrast to last year, where the position was, despite the change in overlap, Korea was still involved in ventilation and therefore validly within the group. Now, I would say this is perhaps a benefit of Jamie coming in, not only a fresh pair of eyes, but unfettered by things like fond memories of better times, personal relationships and emotional baggage. I'm not saying this is the case, but there can be a great reluctance to let certain underperforming assets go. You think it gives you more geographic exposure, it adds a glamorous cachet, impresses our friends at dinner parties that we're jet-setting off to exotic locations. These can all have an influence in our decision-making process. I used to work for an Italian paper manufacturer, and we used to export large quantities of paper to Australia, despite the punitive shipping costs, whereby that tonnage could have been sold on the doorstep within Europe. Now, my theory, not proven, was that the sales director just really enjoyed his business trips to Australia. It's an understandable trait that this is how we're wired as humans and need mechanisms in place, with others ensuring that we're kept in check. And I'm not immune to this. Last year, I attended the MP Evans AGM and 150th anniversary luncheon at the Mansion House, the Lord Mayor's residence. This was a lavish four-hour affair, a three-course meal, complimentary drinks, meeting our directors who all knew how I was. I'm not immune to flattery. They'd all listened to the podcast, very, very complimentary about it. And, you know, they knew without checking where I was on the seating plan and who I was sat with. And I've got a penchant for venues like this. It's nice to meet other influencers in the investing world. So, but as nice as this is, at the end of the day, I've got to steel myself to remember that it's the investment case itself that should determine whether I buy, sell or hold, and not the peripheral trappings, as welcome as they are. In my case, it's easier as I'm managing my own money. This discipline is not always as resolute when people are spending other people's. People are generally more willing to spend other people's money than their own.
Still on Korea, you raised a question about the protracted reorganizing of the Korean corporate structure.
Yeah, Titan, in the trading update on the 29th of November 2022, it stated Titan Korea's return to profitability is now likely to be in the medium term, while it develops its position in the mechanical ventilation market, and we are therefore evaluating options for streamlining the corporate structure and operations of the Korean business. Then over 12 months later, on the 4th of December 2023, it stated Titan Korea is expected to remain loss-making for FY23-24 due to continuing challenging conditions in that market. And the group is taking steps to progress its plan to streamline the Korean corporate structure and operations. And then in the annual report, which is dated the 25th of January 2024, it states, we do not expect that trading in South Korea will materially improve in 2024. However, we are working to streamline the corporate structure and operations, which will reduce costs. So that streamlining work keeps cropping up over the last 16 months. And I asked what tangible progress have been made. Now, Jamie came back to advise that they were bringing pressure on the Korean management to bring down costs. Now, my previous understanding was that the streamlining was directed at reorganizing the corporate structure. Where Titan UK has a 51% of Titan Korea, which is the manufacturing aspect, and 49% of Brown Tech sales, or are the distributors. Now, Keith interjected at this part and said that this was the case, but and that they'd come very close to signing this off. But Jamie disagreed with this, arguing that although it would have made some change to the accounting and reporting, it would have not really affected the value and would have indeed surrendered some element of control in the process. So clearly there's been some change in direction, and I was glad I queried this.
That brings us nicely to another question, which is the company spending money needlessly? In this particular case, of course, the cost of actually running that facility.
Yeah, well, in the report under the risk matrix, the first item that listed is the group is exposed to the risks related to working with associate companies over which it does not have full operating control through its equity holding. And to mitigate this, the group senior management has a regular schedule of visits to meet the associate company's management in South Korea. So my question was, what UK management presence has there been in the year, and how have they traveled there? Economy, premium, or business class? Now, there were three separate visits involving Carolyn and Keith. They lasted 5 days, and the mode of transport was business class. So what I was trying to ascertain was how much UK resource in terms of top management, flights, hotels, interpreters, and all those other peripherals like taxes and subsistence is going into managing this loss-making aspect. Now, I think Caroline didn't like the question about the flights, and I think Jamie saw this as an accusation of some form of gravy train. And he did assure us that this has not been what he has witnessed since he came in. But I do think it is fair to scrutinise all areas, especially as, again, we've been loss-making in three of those last 4 years. And in the last year, the dividends are halved, unlike director salaries. Now, I've travelled to Mauritius and Chile this past winter, and on both occasions, I flew economy. When I reached Santiago, I went on a 15-mile hike the next day. Seemed to manage okay. Now, business class, I see as a euphemism for somebody else is paying. Now, I just digress, as I have another loss-making company in the portfolio, Zitronic. I have just two loss makers, but that's too many. And they recently posted a photo on LinkedIn of our CEO, Mark Cambridge, with two other senior managers returning from a trip to Hong Kong, sat in what very much looks like business class, with that magic curtain behind them, beaming from ear to ear, glasses in front of them, and one giving a V for victory salute. Now, I forward you that photo, Paul. What was your uptake?
Yeah, there. That was, three people flying business class, that's about £6,000, isn't it? I mean, plus, of course, you have the cost of the hotel accommodation when they get there. So, I mean, if your company's a PLC with a responsibility to shareholders and you're making a loss, that V sign they were giving is a bit like sticking two fingers up to the shareholders, because your extravagance is actually contributing to those losses. So, yes, I agree. That was probably very inappropriate.
Yeah. I mean, I went on Skyscanner on that, and working from Manchester, a random date for about a month, you know, I'm not saying these are rates they paid, but from Manchester to Hong Kong, economy was 568, business class 2,900.
Yeah. So, I mean, on the subject of cost, I believe a PLC is required to have non-executive directors, but Titan has five of them. So how much does that cost the business?
Well, I did tally that up, Paul, and the five, I mean, we don't know what Jamie's salary will be until, perhaps I should have asked that, until the next report comes out, but the non-execs total 295,000.
Right, okay. And I believe you were also a bit concerned about if you look at a comparison between your dividend cut and some salary cuts that had taken place during the course of the year.
Yeah, well, if we look at that, the dividend has hived, unlike the salaries. If we look at, as an example, Carolyn's salary, that's gone down, or everything put in together, I think the pension and benefit in kind, I think that's gone down from 127,000 to 124,000. But let's remember on that, let's not forget that she always has been doubling up as the CEO. But generally, the cuts in dividends that we experience, it's not mirrored by the cut in salaries. Just as I mentioned Carolyn there, just going back previously, when Keith was our executive, he was most recently non-executive chairman. When he was executive chairman in 2022, his total salary and benefits in kind was 167,000, and in 2021, including some short-term bonus remuneration, that was 211,000, and alongside him was CEO David Ruffell, at with 193,000, and that was on revenue at 23.4 million. So if you look at that 211,000 against the revenue, that's nearly 1%. So my point being, these are big ticket items, executives. So it's just something to bear in mind.
So how does that compare to your dividend cut then? I know you did mention that when we were discussing this earlier.
Well, I've had a cut in the dividend of 50%, so it's been a negligible downturn for the directors.
Right. Okay. Right. So what happened next?
Well, I asked about Titan Inc., which is in the US, which has just got one employee. I know it's a very small part of the business, but it has been profitable. And I asked if there were flight risks or retirement. You know, we'd just been one person, and I was told that Tyson had made a visit out there in the last year, and he himself has good knowledge of that customer base. Now, at this point, Jamie made a comment about time restraints and wanting to give others a chance to speak. I pointed out that it says in the annual report under the ESG, it states that our AGM is an important forum for private investors to meet the board and ask any questions that they may have. It also states we have regular dialogue with institutional investors and individual shareholders in order to develop an understanding of their views. Now, Jamie took this on board and he said he would try to come back to me, but they had a board meeting to conduct directly after. Now, the AGM is my one and only opportunity to question our board, and board meetings can be scheduled at other times. So I defended my ground, and equally the chair defended his position that the meeting should at some point come to a conclusion. Now, when Jamie was appointed, his other directorships were listed as 12 on top of Titan, which may raise questions about overboarding. And he has held a further four in the last 5 years. So he knows his way around the boardroom and AGMs. And he's like that experienced stand-up comedian who will confront every kind of audience and knows how to play them, benign or otherwise. He's the man with the microphone. So he sits in the big chair, and ultimately he's the power to bring the gavel down and call the meeting closed. So I'm mindful of this. So I'm asking some probing questions, but you know, I'm doing this for a purpose. I want the company to improve, and I want them to see me as an ally and not a threat.
What on earth is overboarding?
Yeah, it's nothing to do with Robert Maxwell. It's when a director is perceived to be sitting on excessive number of boards that could result in a undercommitment of time and attention. Now, against that, I would say that the people who recruit the directors are well aware of their other commitments and feel that they can do the job competently.
And other questions from anybody else that was there?
Yeah. Yes, David Raywood asked a question about the strategic planning, which had been referenced, but this is to be modified. And he asked a question about some exceptionals that have occurred. And David Barry asked about the possibility of delisting, as this can reduce costs, which was not dismissed as a possibility or taken off the table.
So Titan has an option to delist and keep its investors but save money. How does that work?
Well, it has to be voted upon. I think it's 75%. They would put a resolution to the shareholder, and I think 75% have to vote in favour of it. So it's not something that's done easily. And it does cost costs. There is costs of running a PLC on a stock market. I don't think you'd need the non-executives. There's less reporting and scrutiny. And it can, one of the downsides, it can make it more illiquid, but we probably don't have to produce that big bound annual report that I showed you,
yeah,
Paul.
Yeah, very impressive.
Yeah. So there's pros and cons of it. You know, it depends on what your taste is.
All right. So a lot of discussion about management, and a question that's, I think, a good one for people to ask if they go to an AGM or to at least consider, is that are management changes causing or solving problems? Now, there have been quite a few management changes recently, and some of them are a bit controversial. So what's the story there?
Well, Keith, as I mentioned, was previously, until a couple of years ago, executive chair. I think he'd been on board for 10 or 12 years. Previous to that, he'd had a separate stint, I think, for several years as a non-exec. but he'd been our most recently our non-executive chair, and he's left the board. He's decided to retire, and he's been replaced by my Jamie. And he's been voted in by us, re-elected by us. Now, so Claire, Keith's wife, spoke. She was representing a family holding of 17%, a wider family, and spoke of Keith's high values and his principles. And she made clear reference to the family schism between the Andersons and her home family, who are related. And following Harwood having built up its stake has resulted in Jamie replacing Keith as chair. Now, she was clearly upset, which was understandable, and it must be very tragic, personally. Now, Jamie was at pains to thank Keith for his contribution, as we all did, and he assured us that he was there to represent all shareholders, and it is his fiduciary duty to do so. So the mathematics in this have been very interesting, and 17% is not an insignificant block. Claire herself has an excess of 6%. She sold a 1% following the AGM. I don't know if that's on purely on what she thinks the prospects are of the business, or whether it's knowing that an RNS will come out showing a vote of no confidence. But her and Keith still have around, I think, 9 to 10%. Now, I understand that having over 5% entitles you to certain rights. For example, being able to call general meetings. And this is often why you see shareholders sitting at exactly that level. So it's important that these significant shareholders are recognised because they could become a nuisance if they're so motivated. Now, for many, this might feel like a family business. There's a large family holding, but let's remember, it was floated and took public money back in 1988. And that means it has to take a different dimension all the way from accommodating Harwood to people like myself. Now, I'm very friendly with Keith and had a nice chat with him following the meeting. And I totally agree with Claire in his values and principles and decency. But I think it's perversely perhaps why we are where we are, that there's been a reluctance to make some unpleasant and unpalatable decisions. There have been macro events like all businesses face, but this business has not been reaching its full potential for some time. And in the process, that's why Harwood have been able to build their stake. We've continually pointed to the strong balance sheet, owning the land and having net cash, but this will not save us from perennial losses. The business has clearly needed change of direction, but action has been pedestrian, from career to the appointing of a new CEO. And it's as though we've been waiting to finally burn through our cash before there'll be a call to action. So I'm heartened that Jamie is on board, and I see him as some form of corporate fixer. I'm fully expecting to give things a well-deserved shake. We've needed the surgeon's scalpel for some time. The longer we leave this, we'll need the butcher's cleaver. Now, Keith and his family have around 9 or 10%, and despite not being in the chair, I know he's pragmatic and wise enough to want Titan to succeed, as he stands to benefit directly. So as shareholders, we should support, but still query and question when we think necessary.
Right, a good question to ask or to look at again is, are other events outside of the company's control causing problems? And you've obviously got the board's attention by this time. Did you manage to ask anything else in that?
Yeah. I was advised that the clock was ticking, so this was a quick fire round. On a favourite subject of yours, Paul, ESG, in 2019, Titan independently committed to net zero by 2050. Now, this has been loss-making for, again, three of the last 4 years, and I just think this is commercial suicide. If we carry on along this trajectory, we'll reach net zero way ahead of 2050, as we'll cease trading. In the previous report, it stated ESG is increasingly important to investors. Now, this is where I can share a secret with you, Paul, and our audience, and I have to admit to my shame that what is important to me is making money. That's why I'm an investor, and I speak with investors every day, and this desire for net zero from investors, it's a myth. Now, I'm not sat there as a mysterious benefactor like Magwitch from Great Expectations. In the report, it states, we've joined forces with carbon partner Auditel. And I asked what the nature of this partnership was. They're a consultant on carbon strategy and help with the reporting. And I ascertained that they are paid £12,000 per year. So this is not really a partnership. They are a supplier just like any other. I got my meat from Marjorison's farm shop. They're not my meat partner. They're a supplier. And John Goodmeat is too. But I did point out that if we did close Colchester and withdrew from Korea, where we fly out business class, this would help our net zero goal. So it all depends where the major priorities are, Paul. Now, on Auditel, I did do some research. I did look at their website and got a number of clients. A lot of them seem to be charities who seem to have money to spend on this kind of thing. Titan isn't listed. If I'd have been able to have more time to point this out, they might get on to Auditel, seeing as they've given Auditel a shout out in the report to say to Auditel, why aren't we mentioned on your website under clients? But perhaps that might come good. But I had a look at a website called Franchise Supermarket. Auditel seemed to be a franchise model. And there were several profiles. The first one is from Julie Adams. By the end of my first year, I already had 15 clients and more in the pipeline. I have brought my partner into the business too, as there is so much opportunity and I'm so busy servicing my clients. I already have in excess of £150,000 per year in income streams with scope for more. The next one is from, who's this? Sean Connaughton. I started approaching clients by leading with carbon solutions in October 2001. By February 2022, I had already secured 7 new clients, all paying me monthly retainers, totaling nearly £100,000 per year, and I had more clients signed throughout the year. By the end of 2022, I had more clients than I could manage by myself, so I joint ventured the project with my Auditel colleagues. Carbon acts as as the door opener, from which procurement and cost management projects then come on top. The financial rewards are enormous. In 2023, I billed to over £250,000 alone. And lastly, the last one is from David Kendall, who was put, I got a stable, profitable business with a great team behind me, and financially, I'm a better position than I would be if I was still in full-time employment. I was fortunate and very grateful to be able to build our dream home for my family and I last year. I wouldn't have been able to start my property journey without the income from Auditel, and I wouldn't have been able to build the house if I didn't have the time. So flexibility of the business has played a pivotal role. Now, this sounds really lucrative for not a lot of time, really, and sounds good business to be in, probably better than ventilation, Paul.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? I agree. Yeah, lots of money in ESG reporting. I mean, I know it's a requirement for PLCs to do that kind of work, but I'm not really sure if those reports need to be ratified or carried out by a certified body of some sort. I confess, I don't really know. I'd welcome anybody out there who can say it does have to be ratified, but. You know, I mean, Titan's got five non-executive directors. I mean, I would have thought perhaps one of them could take on the ESG reporting task. I'm pretty certain that the reporting framework that Auditel uses is widely available. And besides, as you've said, if your company's losing money, producing an ESG report on the cheap isn't likely to affect the future of the business, is it?
No. I mean, you do know a little bit about this. You have spent some time at the Carbon Trust, haven't you?
Yeah, I did a training course at the Carbon Trust in London because I was working for a company and I was tasked with obtaining a ratified carbon footprint for a product. And it was extremely complicated and expensive and time-consuming. But in that particular case, the ratification was critical to prevent accusations that we were just making the figures up. Mm. But I mean, that company wasn't making a loss, and it was important that it had a rubber stamp on from someone who was independent. But I don't profess to understand whether ESG reporting has to be done by somebody else. I'll probably have to Google that. But I did notice the claim in the annual report that said, to quote, ESG is increasingly important to investors. But I think the marketing department are pushing their luck a little bit with that statement. As you said, returning to profitability is increasingly important to investors.
Yeah, I mean, the quote from the Wall Street, greed is good, Paul. Now, on the ESG, you know, if we're losing money, and somebody turns around and says, I know we're losing money, you know, 3 out of 4 years, but we're really good at ESG. Take some solace from that. That don't butter no parsnips, mate.
No, so, I agree.
Anyway. And then I asked about charitable donations, which I find perverse. As I keep saying, we've been losing money in recent years. I'm making people redundant. We've touched on this previously. I'm not a huge fan of directors giving away my money to charities that they deem worthy. I'd rather that money passes to me and then I can decide. Now, Carolyn told me that this was very low, below £1,000, but could not give me a specific figure, which I was surprised about. I've raised the charity donations at the previous two AGMs. I'd like to know how much we're giving away and to who. In general, I have a pretty dim view of the charity industry, and I do see it as an industry.
Well, I agree it's a small amount, but... if your financial position isn't great, you should really be budgeting. And when you're trying to stick to a budget, those small amounts all add up. I think it would be far better for a loss-making company to focus 100% on getting back into profitability, at which point they could afford to be charitable.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, when we talk about charities, I often go on the charity commission. If you put that in, and you can soon find out from the accounts what the CEO is on point. You've got to come out with this. What's your phrase for the charity industry? What do you call it?
I have referred to it as organised crime with a halo before now.
All right. And then I asked a question, which I did tread. I said I was treading carefully and respectfully. And that was on leaving the board, and where he last served as a non-exec. The founder, John Anderson, was made president. Which is an honorary title, and he was entitled to attend board meetings should he so wish. In the report, it states that he receives £5,000 for advisory services provided. Now, with five non-executives, as you said, Paul, is there any advice provided, or what is the nature of this advice, or is it just simply a hat tip of recognition of John's past contribution? Now, I think I removed a pin from the grenade and rolled it into the middle of the room. There's a lot of awkwardness and nobody seemed to want to pick this up. There was a pregnant pause. And then Carolyn advised that it had always been this way. I couldn't find it in last year's report. But she did say that the advice had been minimal due to personal reasons. And this was under review. All I would say is John's 81 and he's not attended, the last AGM and the one before that. So what I would say is this is unfortunate, but if he's not able to execute that advice, I'd say, you know, why are we still paying him £5,000? So Jamie did seem surprised by this, and I'm glad that it's under review. And lastly, Paul, I noticed that Carolyn had posted on LinkedIn a couple of months back, started my day very differently today. I went into Gilbridge School to carry out mock interviews for 10-year students, year 10 students, and review personal statements. It was great to represent a local business, but also to meet such wonderful, bright students. I loved it, and I look forward to doing it again in the future. Hashtag giving back. Now, I made the comment that it's just that thing, hashtag. And I think with this, it's just group these other things together. And obviously, I've only got certain visibility of what's going on in this business. And, you know, for some of the things that I've highlighted here, Paul, it seems that we've been like a little bit lax. And what else could I possibly find? Now, the point with Carolyn, and she defended her position, but, you know, I would say that across these other things, these several things, and this included, we've been overly benevolent in areas that we can't afford. And it's really time to be being selfish and thinking about Titan and thinking about our shareholders, our long-suffering shareholders. So, you know, I gave that, given all the pressing issues within the business and the fact that we're without a CEO and the CFO is heading the business, she's our highest paid employee, and they've got three other staff in human resources, you know, is this the best use of our CFO's time? So, you know, she defended her position. She said she'd, you know, built up in excess of corporate hours. But I did think this was an important point to raise, really, as a general point of, are we maxing everything out as much as we can do?
Right. So by this time, they must have got thoroughly fed up with you. So what happened next? Is it time to wind up?
Yeah, you know, the meeting concluded. We said a few brief goodbyes. Although my direct, you know, my point, so I meant to be helpful. I want this business to succeed, Paul. Right. I've got a financial interest, but having met the people, and I think it has a valuable role to play. Although I think Jamie will want to show a united front with his board, he won't want to throw anybody under the bus. You know, I think he's learned something, and hopefully some of the feedback will assist him in executing his strategy. Now, as I said after the meeting, you know, there are thousands of companies I can invest in. Why should I invest in this one? You know, with specific reference to ventilation, there's companies like Volution and Genuit, the latter of which I hold, and in contrast, they're profitable and increasing dividends. You know, I voted against three directors. It's not personal. And if the situation changes next year to a position more agreeable, well, they'll have my full support. It's in my interest for them to be successful. Now, Jamie and I have had a subsequent exchange of messages to answer a couple of extra questions that weren't permitted. And, you know, I'm looking forward to speaking to them again in due course. He stressed, you know, he's available for me to speak to at any time.
Well, that's all for this episode. We hope that you enjoyed it. Please remember, the content is for information only and it is not financial advice. If you have a question for Mark for our Question in a Bottle podcast, just complete the form on our website, thedesertislandinvestor.co.uk. Thanks again for listening. See you next time.